Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, let me start with the NBA draft. The NBA draft does not get the buildup or the buzz that the NFL draft does. But that does not mean that it's not one hell of a show, because it is. Even though it was obvious that DeAndre Ayton would go number one to Phoenix, there was still a lot of suspense. Lots of suspense. For instance, Luka Doncic, where would he go? How many teams would regret passing on the youngest EuroLeague MVP ever? Would teams be frightened off by Michael Porter Jr.'s health? Would teams be scared off by Trae Young's suit? Was there any chance that Kawhi Leonard would be on the move last night? Well, we got the answers to all those questions. But really, last night was a coronation of not one, but two kings. And neither one of them was drafted. The first king picked up his crown fairly early in the night. That ruler's name? Joel Hans Embiid. All hail King Joe. Because this is a guy who not only dominates on the court, but he dominates when he's not even near a court. I'm not sure if he planned on tweeting during the draft, but I'm glad he did. Because when comparisons were being made between DeAndre Ayton and Joel Embiid, tweets were fired back, starting with this, quote, "Keep my name out of this, LOL. So you know Joel is paying attention. That's a good thing. Then he immediately chased that with this, quote, "Don't compare Ayton to me either. I play defense." Alvin, can I get some fire for that? "Don't compare Ayton to me either. I play defense.
Keep my name out your mouth."
This guy's already talking junk about a guy who has not played a second of summer league play, let alone an actual NBA game. And I couldn't like it any more than I do. You know who else liked it? Draymond Green. Draymond Green jumped in and tweeted, "You got the crown, man. You got the crown, man," with 6 crowns and 5 laughing emojis. You know you're killing social when Draymond enjoys your smack. And this is the thing about Joel Embiid. He can steal the show any damn time he wants to steal the show. And while I know he hates wearing that protective mask, I love the image of him blasting out those tweets with that mask on his head. This is how good this guy is at Twitter. He's as good at Twitter as he is at basketball, and he's one of the most gifted basketball players ever to step on a court. I can say that already. He's so good at Twitter that his tweets about the World Cup almost have me watching the World Cup. Almost. So my advice to DeAndre, do not respond to Joel. Certainly not on Twitter. Just go out and do your thing, because Twitter is Joe's thing, and you're not getting over on him there. You're not getting over on him there. In fact, nobody is. The only guy that I know right now who can match Joe's Twitter game is my pal Adrian Wojnarowski. The report before the draft was that Woj and other reporters were told not to report the picks before they happened on social so as not to jerk with the TV broadcast of the draft, which was too bad because in previous years, the best part of the draft was always Woj tweeting the picks before the picks were made. And doing it so quickly, it wouldn't surprise me if he knew who a team was going to take before that team knew who it was going to take. The NBA draft was Woj's night, and nobody could beat him, and nobody could stop him. But that was off last night. He was not going to tweet out that Team X was going to draft player Y. And he didn't. He adhered to the new protocol. He did not report any picks. Instead, he just said the teams were, quote, enamored, or, quote, tantalized, or, quote, targeting certain players. And what do you know? They took those guys who they were enamored with, or tantalized by, or targeted. At a certain point, the drama was less about which team was going to take which player, and more about which word Woj was going to draft from his thesaurus. So the combo of Woj and Roger had an absolutely enormous night. They were an unstoppable two-man game. Explosive, dynamic, unpredictable, unguardable. If a team was not tantalized by a player, they were, quote, fixated, locked in, or focused on. He reported that Portland, quote, has a laser on Anfernee Simons. And whoa, they drafted him. But then I've got to say, nothing's going to top this masterpiece. Quote, source, Utah Jazz have no plans to pass on Grayson Allen with the 21st pick, end quote. He didn't say they were going to draft him. He just said they had no plans to pass on him. Very well played. Very well played. In fact, perfection. And yet again, the NBA draft belonged to Woj. I mean, sure, there were no blockbuster deals. The Spurs didn't move Kawhi Leonard, but it really didn't matter. Not as long as Woj and Joe were there doing what they do. I mean, the NBA draft is never going to be the NFL draft, but as long as these two guys show up for it every single year, the association's going to be just fine. I can't wait to see the Woj rule that they enact next year to try to skirt this issue. Whatever it is, it's not going to work. They're playing checkers. My man's playing chess. He is always going to be one step ahead of them. Matt Norlander is my guest. Matt, good morning. What's going on, Matt? How are you?
It's always great to be with you, Jim. Doing fine. And yeah, that was quite the experience last night. And we got the benefit, not for him, but for the rest of us, some good drama with Michael Porter Jr. dropping all the way down to 14 with Denver.
No doubt. I'm going to get to that in 1 second. But you actually started off with where I wanted to go. Matt, you were at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn last night. What was the atmosphere like in that building? And what was the whole experience like for you?
It's always a good time because Knicks fans take over the Nets building and certainly bring a lot of anticipation and a good environment overall. I got to say, though, we're getting a little over the top with this whole green room experience. I don't know if the television production of this broadcasted, but each of the players got introduced, which was kind of a cool moment, but it was kind of a bit drawn out, just a little bit, and we had 19 players invited to the green room, which is great. Like, everyone should get that experience, but at a certain point, it gets really crowded. It almost felt like a mosh pit at a rock concert before this thing got rolling. But in general, good vibe, good times overall, and a number of players who didn't get the green room invite, of course, showed up nonetheless, sat in the stands, and waited on their names to get picked, which is always a little bit awkward for the guys who get invited to the green room, and then you watch someone walk out of the stands, down the steps, and strut across the stage before you get your name called.
No doubt. Matt Norlander joining us. All right, so ordinarily I would start at the very top, but since you mentioned Michael Porter Jr., let me get your thoughts on that, because that was one of the biggest stories. His slide all the way down to Denver at number 14. The guy's played less than 60 minutes of college basketball. So for those who have never seen a healthy Michael Porter Jr. play, how would you describe his game?
You know what, Jim, he got a lot of blowback, and I asked him last night face-to-face for him to clarify some of this on CBS Sports HQ, but when he was asked what his game compares to, he said, listen, sometimes people compare me to a little bit of Kevin Durant, a little bit of Giannis and all that. The truth is, when I saw Michael Porter Jr. play before getting to Missouri, he looked like a future number one, number two, number three pick. There was just no doubt about it. He had the size. He had the skill. If you want to take some sort of, you know, level below combination of what Durant is capable of and what Jason Tatum showed a lot of in his rookie year, Michael Porter Jr. is capable of that. He can get to the rim. He can shoot from deep. He can post up. He can face up. He handles the ball well. A pretty solid defender overall. But now, see, I find this ultra fascinating because he was a victim of, I think, some conspiracy-type doubt about his injuries. And then His ego was put on trial publicly in the week leading up to this, and clearly all this had a huge compound impact. It was unimaginable in October to picture Michael Porter Jr. not being like a top three, top four pick at worst. And then if you factored in the injuries but said he was still mostly healthy by the time we got to draft night, Jim, still would have, you had to figure he would have been a top 10 guy, but he takes a huge drop. And I was sitting next to him. Basically, his table was right up against the back of the green room, and my media seat was all of 8 feet from him, and it was stoic. It was a little bit quiet at times, and his agent, Mark Bartleson, even had to say after, I think it was after Philadelphia picked, he gave him kind of a, you know, sort of a generous look and a smile and said, Michael, you know, you doing all right now? And he was, but he said later, like, you know, it was stressful, and all my friends kept getting picked, and you're just sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting, and now we get to see what's going to happen with this. One, how soon is he going to play? I asked him if he was going to play in summer league, if he was good to go. He would not answer that directly, so we wait and see. But he said his hip was pain-free. And what if we look 4 years from now and Michael Porter Jr. is one of the top three prospects in this draft? This goes down as really one of the all-time gaffes by a number of franchises. And at the same time, you can't totally blame him for doing that. But I don't know if there's really any excuse to letting him fall to the double digits because his ceiling is so high. And he has such great star potential. It's still hard to fathom how so many teams passed on him. And the Clippers passed on him twice.
Of course.
It's unimaginable to me.
Of course. The Friday version of the Daily Jungle podcast is brought to you by Fan Exchange. Clones, the weekend is here. I am telling you, it's better spent at the yard or in the theater than on the couch. Head on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed, so there's no getting to the gate and having to worry about getting in. So whether it's MLB, wrestling, or even a Broadway musical, Fan Exchange gets you closer to all the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com and use the promo code ROME. Promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. Matt Norlander joining us. I love that notion also of his agent saying, "You doing all right? Do I look like I'm doing all right? I was going to go number one before I got hurt. Now I'm at number 14. Matt Norlander joining us. All right, Matt, what about the top of the draft? The Suns make DeAndre Ayton their first pick. Not a surprise at all. How do you think he's going to fit in with them?
I think he's going to do pretty well, and I think he's actually really benefited by the fact that Mikal Bridges is going to Phoenix now as well. And just a quick side note on that, you know, Bridges grew up in Philadelphia, obviously played for Villanova. His mother works for the Philadelphia 76ers, and that camp was so excited. And then I caught them all rocking Phoenix Suns lids about 10 to 15 minutes after that trade happened, and they just collectively looked a little bit shell-shocked. That's kind of something no one really saw behind the scenes. Regardless, Phoenix is a really good player and such a good complimentary piece on defense to Ayton, who I think is going to be a fairly reliable player pretty immediately, and obviously he brings big-time star potential. I think he's going to grow into a top. You know what's funny? I heard you talking about MB going after Ayton on Twitter, which is absolutely hilarious. But one of my projections here with Ayton is I think we'll look up for about 4 years from now, and he'll be a top 25-type player on defense in the NBA. I just think he's too impressive physically, too athletically gifted for him not to take advantage of that. So it might be true that he's got some spotty issues with his defense overall, but Embiid might have been a little bit too quick with the trigger finger there on Twitter.
We're talking to Matt Norlander. All right, Matt, let me ask you about the Cavs. They take Colin Sexton from Alabama. He immediately went to work on trying to pitch LeBron on staying in Cleveland. Do you think that that is a pick that's going to move the needle for LeBron?
I don't think so, at least not right now. And honestly, like, you know, remember when the Cavs were, you know, got Andrew Wiggins and that didn't move the needle whatsoever, and Wiggins had so much hype coming into the league, and LeBron was like, no, we're not doing this. Like, I need Kevin Love if we're going to try and make this happen. And Colin Sexton is not nearly the prospect coming out of college that Wiggins was and doesn't bring nearly the amount of hype. But I will say that if they are able to get Sexton into a gym with LeBron in the coming days, he'll win him over immediately because he can create plays off the bounce. He's a very athletic player. He's extremely competitive, like undeniably really one of the more competitive players I've seen come onto the college scene in the past 6 or 7 years. So he wins them over there. But beyond this, Jim, if LeBron leaves Cleveland, what the Cavs wound up doing is they drafted a player who is not a big scorer. Like, I just don't think this is ultimately a net positive for them going forward if they don't have LeBron. I think if LeBron stays, this is a nice complimentary piece. It was interesting to see the way things unfolded, because prior to the draft getting going, when I saw Trae Young walk in looking like Angus Young, everyone thought, okay, this dude's going to go to the Cavs. It's a lock, because he's mocking. He's basically mimicking what LeBron did prior to the NBA Finals, but it wasn't that. Trae Young instead obviously goes with the Hawks.
Nope, that did not work out like that. So listen, one last thought, Matt. One of the other stories of the draft is the return of Puma as a presence in the basketball kicks game. What have you made of how they've thrown themselves right back into the endorsement game?
It has been fascinating on a number of levels, and I've spoken with quite a few people about this, just in terms of how aggressive they've been with this and how successful they've been. And by the way, Michael Porter Jr. is a Puma client, along with DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley III. And Puma obviously had no vision of one of their biggest signees dropping so far. But for them to do this on the heels and in the midst of a major FBI investigation, obviously into college basketball and recruiting and how shoe companies can muddy those waters so much, it's caught the eye of a lot of people. And they're going to be, you know, fully aggressive with this going forward. I expect Puma to try and get in the grassroots game. I think we'll look up 2-3 years from now and we'll see Marvin Bagley and DeAndre Ayton and Michael Porter Jr. could very easily all have non-scholastic/AAU teams named after them. And I got to admit, it's a little bit refreshing just to get another competitor into the fold here. I also thought it was interesting that Nike struck out on all those guys. Nike didn't get Trae Young. You know, Trae Young goes to Adidas after Puma initially gave them a massive bid early and kind of forced other shoe companies to go on after him as well. So it'll be intriguing. I think this will probably be something where they're able to stick because of the Jay-Z influence, and that really can't be overstated, Jim. The fact that Jay-Z, who, by the way, is also affiliated with Roc Nation, so perhaps some conflicts of interest there, but nonetheless, you have that kind of star power. I think it does have legitimate pull with a lot of these guys who want to be known not just for their skills on the basketball court, but things that they can do outside of it. I think that's more and more a point of emphasis with these players.
When you watch the NBA draft, you see comparisons and you see fashion. Those are two great draft traditions. Let me start with the comparisons because there were some pretty wacky comparisons last night. They were being thrown around during last night's draft. Guys were taking heat for it. But the one guy who's not going to get any heat from me for his comparison is Utah Jazz GM Dennis Lindsay and his assessment of Grayson Allen. Now, let me get a couple of things clear from the outset. Dennis Lindsay is a hell of a GM. He has put together a really strong roster that is a great fit for Quinn Snyder, and it's only going to get better. And Lindsay thinks that a key part of that can be Grayson Allen. And a key part of Grayson Allen are his hands. Quote, Grayson's hands are wide hands, but they have the Jeff Hornacek in his canter where they have a little bit of an extra pad. They're thick. That helps his ability to handle the ball, hook passes, pocket passes, ultimately his superior shooting, end quote. You see, that's the difference between you and an NBA executive. You might look at Grayson Allen and see a shooting stroke. And maybe you try to figure out who that reminds you of. Is it Steph Curry? Is it Mark Price? Maybe Toby Bailey? Not Dennis Lindsay. He looks at Grayson Allen and he sees Jeff Hornacek in canter. It's amazing. And he's not throwing out comparisons for the sake of filling time. He's breaking them down because it's not just about the width of Allen's hands, it's about the extra pad, the extra thickness, and what that means for pocket passes. It's genius. And it's not a joke. Lindsay is serious. Now, speaking of jokes, let's get to Trae Young's suit. I mean, I could have dragged this thing out longer. I could have gone with the winners and losers. I could have hyped up DeAndre Ayton for that jacket lining, or Wendell Carter Jr. for his shoulder cloth, or Lonnie Walker IV for pretty much everything, and then taking a run at other guys for their questionable choices when it came to vests. But last night's fashion was about one thing, Trae Young's suit, or what was left of Trae Young's suit, because my man came rolling out in shorts, full-on Angus Young, suit jacket, bow tie, shorts. It was courageous, it was bold, it was audacious. And it will be truly ridiculous if he does not have an enormous career. Now, I know there have been questions about Trae Young coming in. I have only one coming out of last night. Are you serious with that? I have not seen a draft look that weird since Brett Favre was getting that phone call wearing jorts in his bedroom. Look, I know it's good to get run. I know it's good to get reaction. But at what cost? You never get a second chance to make a first impression. You'll never, ever be able to erase those picks from the web. The guy can shoot. I'm just not sure he can dress. He said afterwards that he picked shorts because he looked back at the other drafts and saw that nobody was wearing shorts. You're right. There's a reason for that. It's a horrible look. Do you want to be a point guard or a UPS driver? Nothing wrong with UPS drivers. I love these guys. They kick ass. But you got to pick, Trae, because you cannot be both. Sometimes things have not been done because, not because nobody thought of them. Sometimes things are not done because they're terrible ideas. That was a terrible idea. Did you think an actual basketball game was going to break out at the draft? Were you expecting to do a defensive shuffle across the stage to get to the commissioner? If so, the shorts make sense. If not, they just make a scene. I know LeBron did it because he can. My man, you just put a monster target right on your back. You better make multiple All-Star teams. If he called a shot, he went legend. Now it's time to ball up, T. Ball up. You already know how hard I go every single day, but The only way to bring it like that is by getting a good night of sleep. The Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams to give you a great night of sleep. You spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. Its breathable design lets you sleep cool, and this is something I didn't know. It also regulates your body temperature throughout the night. And let me tell you, there are lots of people raving about the Casper mattress. More than 20,000 others love their Casper mattress, giving it an average rating of 4.8. You cannot argue with results like that. And here's yet another reason. The price will not keep you up at night. You can also order sheets, pillows, and that will give you the complete Casper experience. Why is it so affordable? Well, Casper cuts out the middleman and delivers it straight to you. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. Right now, for my listeners, you can get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting Casper.com/jungle. Once again, Casper.com/jungle. Use the promo code jungle at checkout. Terms and conditions do apply. Once again, Casper.com/jungle, promo code jungle. I'm talking about Golden State head coach Steve Kerr. Steve, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Jim?
Good, Steve. Great to visit with you. Thanks so much. Hey, can I start with the draft last night, Steve? You took Jacob Evans with the 28th pick. We could get into breaking that whole thing down, but as Bob Myers pointed out, Draymond Green watched Evans and said he can play. So, Steve, if Draymond says a guy can play, I'm pretty sure that's a strong endorsement, right?
Pretty good endorsement, and you better believe Draymond will be all over the kid next year every day. It's one of the great things about Draymond is, you know, he's not just a great player, but he kind of sets a tone with his intensity, and he expects everybody else on the team to match that level of intensity. And for young players, it's great because, you know, you get to show them what winning is about. And, you know, we've got guys like Steph and Clay and KD who are, you know, they have this routine every day where they're shooting and they're getting their shots up and they're working. And vets like Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston just are total pros. And then you got Draymond just driving everything emotionally. So we have a really, really good culture for these young guys to grow up in and to develop in.
We're talking to Steve Kerr. You know, Steve, we're 2 weeks removed now from beating the Cavs in Game 4 and winning a third title in 4 years. I mean, the road to the title was tougher than the ones that came before it. So how does winning this championship compare with the two that did come before it?
It felt more like a relief, to be honest, than pure joy. You know, the first couple of times, it was so exciting. It was you know, the first one was brand new, and then the second one, you know, last year came with Kevin Durant in his first season with us. So it was just a different team. This one felt more matter of fact, and it felt more like, you know, all right, this is supposed to happen. And we got it done, and there's a lot of relief there. So it's a different feeling, but it's still, you know, an incredible achievement and an incredible feeling to have when you know that, you know, you've accomplished what you set out to do 9 months ago. It's a long haul, and to get there is pretty special.
Steve Kerr joining us. You know, Steve, you mentioned Kevin Durant. You also made the point that you felt like year two was tougher for Kevin Durant than year one. Why do you think that was?
I think year one there was a kind of a honeymoon period where, you know, Kevin was trying to acclimate to us. We were trying to acclimate to him, and it was all, you know, the effort was there all year long in terms of trying to make it work. And then we won the whole thing. It was like, oh, we got this. This year it didn't feel like that as much. It felt more like fatigue, and when fatigue sets in, something and I thought some of our worst habits came out during the regular season just because we were spent from the last few seasons. You know, we're going to try to go to the finals next year for the fifth straight year. And that has not been done since Bill Russell and the Celtics did it in the 60s. And even going four straight times has only been done a handful of times. So, you know, you're trying to get people a feel for just how difficult it is emotionally and physically to go through these long seasons, and it's impossible to describe it. But this year, it just felt like the cumulative effect of the last several years just kind of wore us down, and we just weren't at our best. But when the playoffs started, we turned it up, and we got back to where we needed to be.
Golden State head coach Steve Kerr joining us. You know, when you lay it out like that, Steve, I wonder where that leaves you. For instance, when you were with the Bulls, the third title was the end of the run. This is your third title in 4 years. But does it feel, I mean, could you make the argument that as taxing as it's been, you're still closer to the start of the run than the end of the run, or how does it feel to you?
Well, it feels like we could be in the middle of this run because our core four, talking about Draymond, Steph, Clay, and KD, are all right in their primes. You know, what makes it feel a little bit different is we know Andre and Sean don't have a ton of time left in their careers. They're at the back end of their runs, and those guys have been huge. So this feels like a transition period to me. Like, you know, we got these all-stars in their primes, but we've got to develop our young core, and we've got to continue to get energy and productivity from our young players, and you know, guys like Jordan Bell and Quinn Cook, and you know, hopefully Patrick McCall, free agents. We'd like to have those guys back. Jacob Evans, who we just drafted. You know, so we need these young guys to perform and to help lead us into the next part of this run that we're on.
Yeah, see, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to say, one of the things that struck me in watching that celebration after you clinched is that when you were embracing each player, you had a specific message for them about how they contributed to the title, and it wasn't just the superstars, it's the guys that you're talking about. It was the guys who had not played at all. Steph Curry talked about how much he appreciates your, quote, purposeful over-communication when it comes to the role of all 15 guys. That was his quote. So what's your thinking behind that approach?
Well, I was generally, you know, a role player my entire career. I played 15 seasons, and maybe only 7 or 8 of them was I even in the rotation. And I was never a starter other than a handful of games. So I know what it's like to be a bench guy, and I know what it's like to feel like you're out of the loop. And I think it's really important for the guys, you know, 10 through 15, who don't play a whole lot, to feel part of things and to have their voices heard. And so I always try to check in with those guys. I play a lot of people. I want to keep everyone engaged because there's kind of an emotional boost that you get on a team when everybody is invested. And we try to make sure of that here with the Warriors.
We're talking to Steve Kerr. You know, Steve, when you and I used to talk back in the day when you played, I always thought you were extremely thoughtful on so many different issues. And you've been very outspoken on a number of political and social issues as well. My question is this. Is it a role that you welcome, or is it something that you're taking on because the situation now makes it impossible to remain silent?
I think the times are right now are calling for people to speak out, people who have a voice. And not so much on the political spectrum in terms of, you know, conservative, liberal, all that stuff. It's more just human decency. You know, it's more compassion, empathy, you know, what really matters. And I think all of those issues that come up are magnified today because of social media and because of the way the world works. And it just seems like there's such a divide in our country. And I think it's important for everybody to speak up on issues that they feel strongly about, and in a way that is hopefully not divisive, you know, in a way that can bring people together. I have great respect for what the guys on the Eagles are doing, for example, Malcolm Jenkins, Chris Long, and these guys. They're getting out in their communities, and they're doing real work to try to help educate young people, to try to help people in difficult situations. And I have great respect for anybody out there who is truly doing something in their community to help. And, you know, so get past the politics of it and just move on to, hey, let's be good to one another. Then I think now you've got something productive, and I think our society can move forward.
Steve Kerr joining us. Let me just ask you one quick follow then. You mentioned social media. I've seen you tweet about the family separations that have taken place. What's your reaction, Steve, when you see that?
Well, the reaction is, how is this possible? I mean, this is America. We're not supposed to be separating families. You know, this is the kind of thing that happened in slavery, you know, or at the, you know, the Holocaust, purposely separating families. It's insane. This should not be who we are, and yet somehow it has become who we are. So we've got to do something about it. And I understand there are plenty of issues to talk about in turn when we discuss immigration. But separating babies from their parents should never be a tactic, a negotiating tactic, a political ploy. It's just awful. It's lacks any sort of empathy or compassion, and goes against everything that we're supposed to stand for as a country.
He's the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, has led them to 3 NBA championships. He won 5 as a player himself, the 2018 Rudy Tomjanovich Award winner as well. Steve, so good to visit with you. Congrats on that great run, and really nice to have you on this show, and I appreciate your time. Steve, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Because we are moving Steve Kerr and Tariq Cohen is coming up next, we move Alvin's Week That Was all the way up to this spot. What is going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is good to be back. Clones, what's cracking? How was your last week? What's going on? How you living? So good to be back. Had a week in the basement. I feel great. I feel rejuvenated. Charged the batteries. Ready to get at this. Did you miss me? Lots to cover. Starting with USO.
Yeah! And what a finish by Brooks Koepka.
Brooks Koepka is a badass. While we're all guilty of rushing in to say who might be the next face of the sport, it might in fact be this dude.
Whoa.
And then there's Hefty.
Whoa. That's
utterly
stunning.
Ridiculous and shocking as that. Of course, I'm referring to Phil Mickelson running.
No mas.
Yo Tango Hombre.
I apologize to them.
Hefty, grow up, not out.
Toughen up.
Rex number 7.
My 14-year-old tried to do that a couple weeks ago and sat down and have a very stern conversation with him, and I couldn't believe it was happening. I mean, did you just lose your mind?
So shoot your shot, Lakers.
Kawhi not!
I know Laker fans already are. Hell, they've already printed jerseys, hung banners, and planned parade routes. Adrian Wojnarowski.
Well, it has changed. I don't want to say by the day. Right now, it is in peril.
If me taking some old lady's request for Darius Rucker and doubling down to get the guy in the piano to stop playing it makes me a bad guy, then I'm the worst guy ever because I thought it was funny.
Serves every one of his calls, saying the show's so funny, he almost drives his truck right off the road. Hey, John,
hey John,
do us all a favor and finish the job.
He said something about my arm looking like flesh-eating disease. Even if I did have flesh-eating disease, it wouldn't be that surprising, Duke. I'd want to eat me, too.
How do you not come to terms with a guy who just won you a Stanley Cup? Maybe your last Stanley Cup. How the hell do you let that guy walk? And over what, a fifth year? More money? John Rothstein. What about DiVincenzo?
Plays with a Delonte West level edge.
Power play is dead, man.
And you're also looking at somebody like Bob Surrey.
Check out the tour stop for sure.
That's what I'm saying. You'll be at the tour stop, right?
Definitely.
J.J. Hickson.
Who's Jim?
Jim Rome.
Rome is burning.
Burning.
Yeah.
What's up,
Flip? What's up, criminal? What's up, home invader? I hate to see that happen to him. I hate to see that happen to the kid whose face he rearranged.
I survived breast cancer, brain cancer, domestic violence, and a gunshot wound. I do more by 7 a.m. than most of y'all clones do all year.
Or the lady clones.
Or lady clones.
Golden ticket.
I got a golden ticket.
Thanks, brother. Big fan. You know that.
I love Anthony Kim. That's the guy that I would break the martini routine for. If I could find AK tonight, I'd celebrate National Martini Day with him. So got to Houston to partner with James Harden, gone. Got to go back home to Atlanta, gone.
No,
got to go to Charlotte and put up numbers, gone.
Boom.
Gets to go to Brooklyn, and, well, you can see the pattern.
Still a champion.
Career on the Lakers?
I
did you ever hear about that?
No, I do not know about that room. Tell me about that room.
Dude. I mean.
Did you know Paul Block very well?
Paul gave you great advice because Jake Bloom is a great lawyer.
Jake kept me, I think, for 2 days. But you're right. The firm is amazing, though. You're right.
I don't even need to come on the air. I'm that damn good. Email.
Giving a sperm donation for the free porn and cookies. Right on brand, Steve.
You are not.
Give me my Whopper. It is.
America!
Give me my Whoppers. Russia.
I'm volunteering at a listener-supported radio station in Fort Collins.
All right, Luke. Now you have even more time on your hands because that golden ticket that used to be in your hand is now back in my hand. Give it to me, Alvin. Dwayne Casey.
Nobody wants to be fired, Jim. There's nothing that you want to do to say, hey, please fire me, especially after the good season we had. It hurt, but that's part of the territory.
Albie was moonlighting again, working on his next legendary call. Dude, stay Rick.
Yep. And then...
Oh!
I never thought a hot dog could hurt.
My guest is Jalen Mills. Carson Wentz looked like Carson Wentz in 7-on-7 drills.
Him throwing the ball in those tight windows and trusting himself. That was really, really big for me because I know the type of person he is and how much it means to our team.
The first annual Great American Smack-Off.
Jim doesn't talk to the TV. He talks to the mic, which means he talks to you.
You mean to tell me I don't have to stand on the corners of Corona to get blasted in the face with hot dogs? Give me my Philly season ticket.
The only item on our shared calendar, Corona, is Mrs. Corona's scheduled Northern Sando. But Tyler and I agreed to call that off after she DM'd us a pic.
Like my girl Danica says, we like to ruin tenderonis, not dudes who look like celery sticks.
And you know,
finish the job, John.
Oh, I'm still learning.
Giant ass turkey.
Yummy.
Yeah, some morning wrestling.
Ragu or Prego.
Top that, Whitey. Oh.
Fluke in Fart Collins. Come on in, little guy. Time for you to do a long sit-down.
Good night now!
Alvin got something out of this very segment into his week of best of the week that was. Alvin, that's incredible. Incredible because not only did you get that all done, you got it done early. There were so many great things in that. That was incredible. Alvin DeLauro, I could reference probably 30 things from that. Mark, what's up?
Jim, yo, before we get started, let me ask you something, sure. And I want you to be completely honest with me. Rex in the ABQ is like Janet's third cousin, isn't he? You know, he's kind of slow and strange, and when he moves into a new neighborhood, he has to go door to door to, quote, identify himself, and he asks you to give the kid a little run on the show, am I right? Okay, look, you don't have to say anything. I don't want you to get in trouble with the missus. If I'm right, just calmly adjust your right earpiece, and we'll all know. But yeah, this is my official RSVP for the Smack Off, and I'm doing it on the phone because I respect the process. But I hate to break it to you. You're not going to hear from a few of the dregs you're calling out to, Jim. Like, you're not going to hear from Vic and NoCal because, like, the winner he is, my man got kicked off of Twitter. And, Vic, I'm trying to figure out, how can you get kicked off something that's free to get into? You know, that's like, I don't know, getting kicked out of the library or removed from the beach or booted out of a park. All things that happen to homeless people. Shocker. And yeah, it was great to hear from Brad. And I know Alvy ran it back just now and used his RSVP to attack Canada, Canadian clones. That's what this freak is reduced to. What, beating up teens got too tough for you? White J.J. Hickson? Don't count on the BIC to show up, Jim, because word is he caught poor Kathy McVay's act at the Phillies game this week, and he was all like, you mean to tell me I don't have to stand on the corners of Corona to get blasted in the face with hot dogs? Give me my Phillies season tickets! And finally, there's no need at all to call out to the jungle's resident drama queen, Mike and Indy. He hasn't stopped crying about the last Smack Off. Mike's that crazy chick who announces on social media that she's quitting social media, not recognizing the irony of quitting social media on social media. Dude's kitchen is as insecure as Kevin Durant, who, coincidentally, also gravy-trained a former champ to get a chip. But what really pushed this malfunctioning Westworld robot over the edge? It was the fact that Lethen LeGimmick didn't invite him to be part of that wrinkly, smelly pop-up orgy that went down in your studio, a geriatric swingers party that sent the stock prices of Cialis and Natty Light through the roof. Jim, don't count on these three, because their smack-off is going to consist of all of them getting together and reenacting the human centipede. Wait, wait.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
What's up, Alvin? Had enough of that phone call? We go to Arlington, Texas. Mike, what's up, brother? How are you?
Pretty good, Vance Smack. Thanks for taking the phone call. I'll try not to get run. Hey, real quick, I caught the show yesterday, and Jim, it was epic of you to play back the Bricks winning call from 95. You know, dude, I consider JT a good friend. I always have. We've known each other for years. We hang together at games up in Oakland, had beers with Lincoln Kennedy one night, see him in Vegas all the time. I remember back in late 95, real quick here, this guy would drive up from La Jolla all the way to the K-Mac Studios in Pasadena every Sunday night to do a midnight show, and he paid for his own airtime. He gave up a six-figure job as a stockbroker, Jim, living in La Jolla because he was so inspired by you. And that's grinding. And it's straight off the jungle coaching tree, my man. Next up, I didn't get my request in, Vance Mack, but if you nail this Hall of Fame gig, you have got to bring in Raiders fifth-round pick Maurice Hurst. This kid is a jungle legend waiting to happen. Similar in game to Aaron Donald. Yeah, I know. He was a lock first rounder until this heart thing popped up out of nowhere. But he's since been cleared. Specialists in both Harvard and Michigan have cleared him, and he is already running with the first team in OTAs. He's the best Uber driver in NoCal, and he's got a brighter future than Bella B's cherry red lipstick. This Hall of Fame gig, Vance Mack, you have got this thing. The clones are what we refer to in the military as a force multiplier. Now, speaking of which, Jim, I'm heading into the basement for a while, for a long while. Once again, the Air Force is sending me to the Middle East, but not to worry, as my comrades in arms from the Navy, the Army, and the Marine Corps will tell you, us Air Force pukes, we all get Ramada Inn-type rooms with turn-down service, Wednesday bingo, and a movie, Friday night surf and turf, and unlimited lightning-fast Wi-Fi, so I'll still be able to lob the occasional phone call to you. That's all I got for now, Vance Mack. And you know,
rack him! So I think I'll try a telephone call. All right, so Matt in Vancouver started earlier. His phone call dropped. He worked his way back into the rotation. Because he was in the Smack-Off last year, and he's going to be in the Smack-Off this year, I'm going to give him another shot. Let's go back to Vancouver. Matt, what's going on?
Apologies, Romy. Joke recycling wiener from Hollywood came and tried to snatch my phone out of my hand. But back to Brad and Corona, man. Hey, Brad. You call me and Tyler 2.0s? That just means we're better than you. We're newer, upgraded versions of you, you moron. And then this panhandler comes in with some scorching hot coin takes and a shared calendar blast for me and Tyler. The only item on our shared calendar, Corona, is Mrs. Corona's scheduled Northern Sando. But Tyler and I agreed to call that off after she DM'd us a pic. We realized wrestling with her would be great if you like wrestling with humans that are shaped like a potato. Speaking of humans that are shaped like a potato, Rome, that 10K Lev has won over the last two Smack-Offs seems to have been spent on KFC and cakes. I don't know if you've seen Lev since last year's Smack-Off, Romy, but his new double chin thinks maybe he should lay off on the Caleb and Green Bay Fat Blast. And lastly, Pimp, I want to go on the record. I'm in this thing for the green jacket, the ring. So when this 5K comes my way, I promise to donate that $5,000 to Kyle and Green Bay's bum ass. And Warby's sending in a Smack-Off picture montage to give all these clones a nice succulent treat on Smack-Off Day. Thanks for the second round, Pimp. Peace.
Dude, you earned it, Matt. I'm so glad you called back. I am so glad that guy called back. I don't know what it is. And again, I'm a, quote, U.S. American, right? But I don't take any offense to that at all. They're right. We are fat. Lady Clones, what's up, Liz? How are you?
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Super. Liz, how about you? How are things?
Awesome. Hey, I see all these guys going after the Canadian twins, Matt and Van and Tyler, but let me give you a lady's perspective here. 6 months ago, my boy Blake Shelton won People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive, and I dissed him for being a fat Ewok, but I'll take that over a guy whose body looks like a skinny droid. Speaking of meat, I bet when these two go on dates, they're the ones just ordering a house salad when it's typically the ladies who do that. Like my girl Danica says, we like to ruin tenderonis, not dudes who look like celery sticks. War Rogan Loam's upcoming debut on the Jim Rome Show, and War Wood Scopes, and where are you getting in that Hall of Fame? I'm out.
Thank you, Liz. Liz in Falls City.
Good night now!